This is My Kind of Weird, a podcast where two people swap and pitch three kinds of media: something watchable, something readable, and something listenable, to see if each other says at the end, "That's my kind of weird." I'm your host, Anthony Pollock, and joining me today is creative director of indie game studio Dragon Bear Studios, Paulina Sammy.
Hello.
Paulina, are you ready to get weird with me?
I definitely am.
All right, Paulina, present your something watchable.
Okay, so I would like to present from Netflix, Way of the House Husband.
Kazte, Gokudo no Sekai de Osorerareta, Denses no Yakuza, Fujimi no Tatsu.
So, if you imagine a tired and, heart-worthy Yakuza boss has decided to retire and embrace the life of a house husband in Japan, which, as you can imagine, is very common. And I'm being sarcastic. It's very uncommon.
Yes, very.
What's really great about him is he just really takes the Yakuza way of life so seriously that, you know, he takes it through everything he does. So it's actually like, to high level summarize, it's this hilarious deadpan comedy based on this really popular manga by Kusuke Uno, which I hope I said that right, which is like massive in Japan. I think it had sold over 1.2 million copies and just massive, and I think the fans are very, very, hardcore. And so I was really excited to watch this.
Just trying to imagine hardcore house husband fans.
Manga fans, right? The whole concept is just so wild because it's just so metal. Like the opening sequence is this guy's back, totally ripped, covered in muscles, and then like wearing an apron. holding this samurai sword and using it to make cake or something. And it's just actually one of the top two funniest things I've ever watched in my whole life. Gosh, it's just so deadpan. And he's just, so just another thing I guess I'd say is in the English adaptation, the voice actor is, I can't remember his name, but he's the same voice actor that plays Legacy in Beastars.
So he's just
like got the sexiest voice in the whole world, world. And
man, is that fraught with problems.
That is a whole different kettle of fish, but
one pack in another episode, perhaps.
I think so. I think it's a very interesting anime. So my pitch for this one is that, like, what if a Yakuza husband took on the duties of, you know, home care as seriously as he does, you know, anything in the clan, and just like, you know, the care and attention to detail, and just in one of the episodes he fails to do something, or he perceives himself to fail to do this really simple like cake or something, I forget exactly, and then so he pulls out his samurai sword and offers his pinky to his wife. and she's like, "No, I'm not going to cut off your pinky, it's not a big deal, it's fine." And it's just amazing. And there's so many interesting things about it. So like, I love the way it's reimagining and redefining masculinity, actually, right? It doesn't matter what you do, it's how you do it. And everything that he does as a house husband, he does so seriously. And, you know, he'll wear the apron and he'll make the birthday decorations and the cake and everything, but he'll do it with like everything, like every single fiber of his being is on the line. And I'm like, yes, that is the coolest thing about masculinity. Like, I don't know. As obviously there's a lot about masculinity, but, and not caring what other people think. And you're just trying to serve your family in the way that you decide to. Like, isn't that so honorable?
I haven't seen it yet, but it's quite all read it. But, it's really surprising just the whole premise is, because I feel like, at least my understanding of Japanese culture is, I feel like masculinity is so wrapped in in a tight bow with Japanese nationalism as well. So it's just kind of one of those just really hard, I just feel like hard molds to break for this to, for it to be doing what it does in this. I feel like it's quite incredible that this is a success, let alone existing.
I agree. Like if anything could buck the standards of these gender roles and how they are still pervasive and still so strong in society in Japan, like it would be this, right? Like, and I think that what else is really cool about it, like, so yeah, I love that meta thing of like, yeah, this is actually a dialogue about all the things that women do and they try so hard that men possibly don't notice, or their husbands might not notice, or their partners or whatever gender they are. And I think that that's a really nice meta thing as well. Of like, and I, so I think, Anthony, that it's probably a wet dream for millions of wives in Japan, like just huge. Like, so, for example, I showed my sister this and she was just enthralled. And I don't want to say too much about my sister and her husband, but you can imagine she was just like, this is so amazing. Because even in Western society, you don't really see this explored, I think, like this anyway.
No, not like this. I mean, we just release horrible TV shows called House Husbands that are just absolute trash. But no, not in this in this way. It does release sort of a interesting narrative that so firstly, does the main character, does he succeed in being a Yakuza turned house husband?
I think he does.
Okay. So the interesting narrative there is men need to be, you know, part of the Yakuza in order to be decent at house chores.
I think it's, I don't think it's quite like that. It's definitely showcases his failings and his journey and like how he does not succeed all the time. But, and he like, he gets dupped by the cops all the time when he's trying to deliver lunch in like a hilariously shady briefcase, which is still what he normally would take anywhere. But people think it has drugs in it, but it just has cake in it. Like, I love the, yeah, just this take on the perspective of what you expect this to happen, but it's not. So I think that it's not, he doesn't succeed every time. And I think another really thing that I admire about it is it actually does talk about the PTSD in a way.
Okay.
From like, not in a heavy way, which is I think really useful. Like, you know, like the PTSD of all the hard things he's done as a Yakuza boss. Like, for example, he has to babysit a kid at one point and he has no idea what he's doing. He's like pulling out all these like poker games and the kid's just like, this is the weirdest thing. And then the kid breaks a toy. So, and it's his like wife's favorite toy and he's just totally shattered. So he takes the kid to the backyard and they do a burial procedure. Which is just so metal and so Yakuza, but like the values of that, right? Like, we got to take ownership and responsibility for what we did.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. Okay. So, my something watchable is Trece, which is a Filipino comic series.
Apparently, the train broke down over the Guadalupe Bridge. Service crew found it like this. Lots of blood, no bodies, and a pile of missing persons reports.
Tabi tabi po.
Greetings, young Trece.
Good evening, Nuno.
There was a time when magic in the world was a natural part of life. That age has passed. People fear what they don't understand. That's why our family has always been the bridge between mankind and the supernatural.
Which has been adapted into an anime, a Netflix anime, which is, I believe, just came out last week, which will be 2 weeks as of this being aired. Don't know why we call podcasts being aired anymore, but that is what it is. So Trece is this fantastic sort of exploration of Filipino folklore and myth sort of reimagined into sort of like a Constantine Sandman sort of anime series. It stars this female protagonist, Alexandra Tressé, who basically has the she's like a healer slash warrior who serves as the protector to humanity and sort of treads the fine line of between the working with supernatural beings like demons and orcs and goblins and all those sorts of things, and also the fine line of humanity. So she very much she is a sort of a strong character archetype, which spends a lot of her time trying to sort of be that bridge where there's unexplained sort of deaths and things like that in the Philippines that she investigates. And pretty soon she starts to figure out that there's a sinister plot, which is, you know, in typical sort of comic book or manga or anime form, it's going to be about the end of the world. So she has to do what she can to try and stop that from happening. So it's lots of fun. The voice acting is superb. The animation on it is just top notch. And I binged it in all of 3 hours because there's only 6 episodes. So
gosh,
I say for that, it's really impressive. And if it doesn't get renewed, it's one of those, I mean, obviously sad face, but if it doesn't get renewed, it's sort of self-contained in those 6 episodes. So if you were a hardcore sort of Tressé fan and were into the comic and all those sorts of things, I don't know that you would be as disappointed as you could be.
It just in terms of like the closure, because you've already known
the closure. It. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. The story is very self-contained. Mm. There's lots of, it doesn't shy away from the fact that it's Filipino inspired. It's not whitewashed at all. In fact, even the only sort of white passing character in it is, he has a Spanish accent because obviously a lot of people in the Philippines, you know, being, you know, in
the past colonized. Sorry.
Colonized, so yes. By the Portuguese and all that type of stuff, obviously. It doesn't, so the white passing characters in it aren't necessarily white as such. So I kind of liked that it just kind of went whole hog into what the story is, how it was influenced, and pushing out those influences into sort of a demographic which there's a lot of white people that watch anime and stuff like that. So I find that quite inspiring.
That looks really interesting. Is it very gory?
I'd like to say no, but I feel like I'm a little bit desensitized by it all.
Okay.
I wouldn't say, I guess sort of my benchmark for comparing anime violence is it's not as violent as Ninja Scroll, but then there is violence in it, but and there is a bit of gore, but I mean, when it's sort of magical or supernatural kind of like
fantasy
goblins
violence
and demons being, you know, cut in two by like a samurai sword, is it really gore? It's, you know, it's hard to sort of make that determination.
Cool.
All right, present your something readable.
Okay, I really struggled with this one because I read a lot of books. And I've been tossing up between Jemisin, which I'm a really big fan of, and Naomi Novik. But I'm just going to go with Naomi Novik today because I thought I really like this pitch I want to give to you. So I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called Deadly Education. And it's a book by Naomi Novik who did Uprooted and Spinning Silver, which are books I really, really love. Anyway, the premise is, what if Harry Potter was really, really fucking dark?
Go on.
So you say it would be like Harry Potter, except the main character is, you know, a bloodline Slytherin that was trying to be good.
I mean, isn't that the back half of Harry Potter anyway?
I guess, but like in a bit of a flip, instead of the kind of hero's journey where you like you learn spells and you get more powerful as you go, what if you started off maximum powerful, but all your spells are really, really evil and super destructive, and it's very difficult to coexist in a school without blowing everyone up? And also a note about the school, instead of it being a friendly Hogwarts, there's no teachers. It's kind of a living hell. You only kind of get by creating political strategies to, I guess, get allies. And you, the only ways out is to graduate or die.
Right. Okay.
Metal. Very metal.
Yeah. It's nothing more metal than that.
And it's kind of like a teen slash adult fic, probably more teenish. But I don't really like teen fiction because I guess it feels very, very young. It didn't feel like that in this one, and I definitely felt like the book read itself, which was a really weird feeling, and definitely goes with that whole Harry Potter vibes of like the book is alive and it read me rather than I read it, if that makes sense. So the protagonist is this half Indian woman, and she's just really struggling with fitting in and how powerful she is. And she doesn't want anyone to know how powerful she is because that would make her a threat. And she has this like friend who is in a way the most hilarious, like white male savior complex character you've ever met, but he really doesn't mean to be, but he is. And so she does all these things, and because she wants everyone to know that she's, you know, really cool because no one really likes her and she hasn't made friends yet. And then he just comes along and accidentally steals her thunder every single time, and gets credit for all of it. And I don't know, I just really enjoyed this book. I definitely would recommend it. And I also just love how it's kind of the anti Harry Potter vibe about it. Like, what if Harry Potter was really good and well written and actually like showcased strong women characters, is my hypothesis to you.
I mean, I don't know. It's hard for me to weigh in on Harry Potter just because I've only seen the movies.
Right.
So I don't, and I understand just as much as everyone else has read sort of an IP that then gets translated into film, that there's always missing parts, that there was, I mean, the last sort of two films, I feel like they were trying to fit so much of that last book in that it became a bit of a mess. So, yeah, I don't know with Harry Potter. I feel like the first three films of Harry Potter are exceptional. Like, they're just really good. They're great classics that you can watch them again and again and again. But I feel like as you started to get more into the epic of, you know, the Voldemort versus Harry Potter epic, it became like almost like they went off track a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you there. I read the first five books and I loved them as a child. I watched the movies, but I kind of stopped after like movie five or something because I just felt like this is derailed. I agree, exactly that. It totally derailed. And I also just kind of, upon reflection now, I guess later on, many years after reading, I feel like, yeah, it was very boy-centric. Like I kind of wished for more from, you know, one of the most famous female authors in the world. And all the women characters very much disappointed me, I guess, except Hermione, which was like, you know, a bit overpowered in some ways. But yeah, I guess it was just that, and I guess all of the stuff that's happening around J.K. Rowling and turfy stuff, which taints my relationship.
I was wondering
with
who was going to bring that up first.
Yeah. Don't know how I feel about it anymore after all that stuff.
Yeah, it's so I feel like authors that introduce, or just writers in general that introduce like brazenly feminist characters like Hermione, for instance, which she basically is. She's trapped inside the body of, you know, like a 10-12-year-old girl at the start. From there, they established that. But as there becomes sort of a love interest for the other character, like male characters normally, they sort of lose, that character loses themselves in that other character, which I don't necessarily agree with. I don't see why that the what the core motivations of that character or what she likes, dislikes, what makes her get up in the morning, why that needs to change just because she likes this dude over here or this girl or that person over there. I don't see why that should have to change. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Like you can look at like Lois Lane with, you know, Superman. Very go-getter, career-driven woman, but then as soon as she falls in love with the Superman, it's just, you know, all bets are off. You know?
She becomes a plot device, basically.
Pretty much. And I've had this discussion with other people, and they're just like, oh, well, she's still strong and empowering, but is she, if she's all she's doing, and is, like you're saying, Pauline, she's a plot device just to involve Superman in saving her? Is that really what a feminist is? What a strong woman is? Shouldn't she be able to get herself out of said scenario? Isn't she smart enough to not get captured by the fucking bad guy in the first place? You know, it's just
every single week. Like, come on.
Yeah.
should she get frequent flyer miles with that or something? I don't know. I agree. Like, and not to say that like a feminist woman will be able to have all the answers by herself, but she should do any type of collaborating with anyone to make this, I don't know, Monster of the Week stuff really bores me, to be honest. So
Yeah. Well, at the same time as well, the whole sort of justification of someone's personality and around what a man is and likes and all that type of stuff, I just don't engage with it anymore. Mm. And not because I identify as a feminist, because I don't necessarily. I'm more centrist when it comes to that sort of discussion. I'm obviously pro women's rights and all that type of stuff, but it's more about, I feel like no one should really lose themselves in another person. Yeah, you can fall in love, you can have your happy after, but why should you and who you are change for that person?
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, you're right. Basically, after the like fifth book or whatever, it all just got really watered down and overwhelming. And I don't know, I didn't really enjoy the writing after that. So, and yeah. I think that's one thing I did really like about this book is that there is a romance, but it's kind of like a not romance. Like, it's just there's a bit of intrigue and there's a bit of stuff, but it's not the main focus. And I think that's more exciting because romances can be, as you say, they can be all-consuming in literature and lose the whole point of the book.
Yeah, very true, very true. All right, so my something readable is Shadow Man. We'll talk about issue one. So it's the recently sort of released iteration of Shadow Man through Valiant Entertainment, written by horror writer Cullen Bunn, who has worked on Venom, for those Marvel Comics people listening at home, and John Davis Hunt, who I believe he's done a fair bit of work over at DC Comics. So did you ever play, as someone who works in gaming, Paulina, did you ever play the Shadow Man game?
I didn't, actually.
Okay.
No, not that specific one.
Okay, no worries. So it's basically a Jack Boniface, a.k.a. Shadow Man, is this sort of this powerful protector who keeps humanity safe from the demons that sort of are trying to kind of claw their way through reality, space, time, all that type of stuff. It's it sort of leans into the sort of, I guess, the folklore of things like, I've lost the, what is it? It's voodoo magic and witchcraft and things like that. So it leans a lot into that, which is nice, which is lots of fun. It also is, again, very, at least this iteration of the character is almost Constantine-ish. So there seems to be a bit of a theme with what I'm pitching here, so sorry about that. But the artwork is visceral. It's very metal. It's very gory in parts too, but appropriately gory when you see things like demon virus infected humans blowing up and all this type of fun stuff. So it's very dark as well, but appropriately dark at the same time. And it's taken a character that has in the past been very superhuman into more of a sort of anti-hero sort of shtick. So lots of fun.
Awesome. Interesting. I was just Googling the picture, and it kind of reminds me of Slender Man a little bit.
Okay, Slender Man, right. Yes, all hail Slender Man, so say we all. Man, that's a – wow, that's – we're really showing our age now, aren't we?
Gosh.
Oh, dear.
That's okay.
Okay, so Paulina, present your something listenable.
Okay, I also struggled with this. Actually, Anthony, the task that you gave me to choose three types of media was so difficult. Like, gosh.
Oh, really?
Like, just to try and choose three, the world is so big. It's very hard, but it's a cool exercise in itself.
Well, you know, we only have an hour.
That's true. So I tossed up between like three things. Forest of the Piano, which is not actually listenable. It's an anime that I listen to. It's really pretty. It's a class if you like classical music. And I also tossed up between my dad wrote a porno, which I don't know if you've heard that one before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's the one where this British guy like came across like some erotica in his dad's basement or something. And I think his dad published it.
Yes.
Oh, published it. Oh, okay.
Right, if you ever want to hear the worst erotica you've ever heard, definitely listen to that.
Right. How's that one work? He like reads out like a chapter each episode or something, doesn't he?
And it's just kind of like if some guy in your 50s who imagines what corporate life is but has no idea tried to write an erotica and like tried to mix in this really weird fantastical idea of what business life is like with hilariously strange metaphors like, I don't know, her breasts hung like pomegranates is a thing that he literally says.
I didn't even know pomegranates hung.
It's just the wrong shape. It's just everything's wrong with that metaphor. And I think that's what's really funny about it is all the metaphors are so whack in this podcast. But anyway, that's not the one I'm going to pitch to you.
I guess it'd be as bad as his testicles were as supple as ripe grapes.
Yeah, and like the strangest proportion in that imagery, right? And yeah. Anyway.
Well, you wouldn't want testicles that small.
Probably not.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So I keep interrupting. Please. No,
that's okay. It's very, like, it's definitely a funny and strange thing. But in that lieu, I thought maybe I'd actually talk about a podcast called Wonderfully Done.
Hello, sweet bean. Welcome to Wonderfully Done, a wholesome show about sex, communication, and loving yourself.
Presented to you with love by me, Lauren.
And her fabulous friend, Victoria. Which, of course, is me. Hello again. It's truly
which is by Lauren Clinic and Vix, who are actually two of my friends from the games industry.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, but it's kind of started up during the pandemic as a way of, I guess, trying to connect with people and create connection during that really difficult, the first wave of lockdown. And it's this really like wholesome and truthful, I guess, honest, barefaced even, like podcast where it's audience driven in the sense that you send questions and then the hosts talk about it, about like sex and self-love and communication.
Right, yeah.
And there's a lot of, I think it's very, very queer friendly, which I think is really good.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, definitely. So I found that like my pitch to you is that I found it really calming and I really liked the way that it rationally gave perspective on issues that people would ask questions about come up with like solutions and empathize and I guess put the person first. And what I really liked about it, I think particularly something for actually all humans, is it's really strong emphasis on boundaries, like creating boundaries for yourself and creating boundaries for your relationships. Like there's that thing you were complaining about just earlier where there are no boundaries in any of those fictional medias and their relationship, and to retain that sense of self. And I think that, so the, like every episode is different. The one particular one that I really liked was this one on kind of like by questioning curiosity, I think, which is really interesting and prevalent because I think 50% of queer or queer questioning people are under the bi umbrella. So that's a big percentage.
Yeah.
Which is like 10% of the whole population. So I don't know, maths.
Yeah, numbers.
Maths. <don't know> some. what's 10% of 8 billion? Anyway, so.
A lot.
A lot. And I really liked that, yeah, it was just this really wholesome podcast where they talked about self-care and sexuality, which I guess are topics that they're not, I don't know if they're taboo, but they certainly are in, I guess, mainstream circles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I really like the normalization of professional help, like encouraging people to go to see a psychiatrist or a psychologist, because that's really good and healthy. And the normalization of sex work as a professional industry and like the things, the reasons why that's really good as a professional industry. And yeah, just like this bigger picture kind of, I guess, narrative and discussion that they're having about their personal ideologies and feelings about how can we think about this in a really sex positive way and, you know, healthy way for all parties concerned. And yeah, I don't know. I was just really touched by how rational all of that was in one space, if you know what I mean, especially as it's a very emotional topic.
Well, it's very emotional, and I, as a straight man, I don't feel like I'm limited in terms of who I can talk to about things. I can only imagine how someone would feel, feeling like they're the only, I mean, especially if they're from like, I don't know, like a, I'm just spitballing here, but like a rural or community town that where they feel like the vast majority are cis straight people, and they don't really have someone that they can feel they can confide in, except for online, or even if it's face to face, without sort of finding themselves to be the token queer friend, you know? That's, I mean, it's tough. It's good that there's a space, though, that this podcast is creating for it, though. I saw that the great thing about the podcast while you're talking, I quickly looked them up, is that they allow people to put in anonymous questions as well, without sort of that fear of being sort of, I guess, you know, feeling like they might be shamed or they might be judged based on their question, which they do on their Curious Cat website. It's great. It's I just love that there's something like this out there.
Definitely. Yeah, no, definitely that anonymity is very important in queer circles. Like, it's funny, that scenario that you just described was totally what I grew up with. Like,
being the
queer person,
the queer friend, right.
Well, isn't, I was like the queer person, like in also like the in like the super in a regional area of Victoria where I was like the only brown person too. So this double whammy of like feeling really odd about it. And I remember, you know what I'm talking about.
And with it, when you say brown, do you mean Indigenous Australian?
Oh no, I'm not Indigenous, but I am. I have roots in Malaysian, Indian, Chinese, Russian, all of it, really.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Right.
Yeah.
And how's were you able to sort of confide in someone from during that age, like be it a family member, friend, or was it just kind of you just kept that stuff to yourself because you don't feel like anyone could understand?
I remember in year 11, I was in the library with a bunch of girls that I don't really remember them anymore, but like just a bunch of like white girls. And I remember saying like, I think I am bisexual. And they were like, oh, that's nice. And then we never talked about it again.
Yeah.
I think I definitely shelved that until I guess many years later. And I think I only really came out in my mid 20s.
Yeah.
When I finally realized it. Yep.
Yeah. I guess I'm assuming here the, and from what I've read, is that the, I guess the sort of the issue for someone coming out as bisexual is it doesn't seem as sort of, it's for people who don't understand, there's sort of that gray area where they don't understand where like that you need to sort of, trying to approach this in a delicate way, it doesn't feel as
like hardcore
as being like coming out as if you're gay,
yeah,
or lesbian, Do you know what I mean though?
I do know what you mean. It feels like it's you're straddling a fence or something instead of jumping over into a different yard for a weird backyard metaphor. But like I guess it comes with its own issues of like bi erasure, which is a huge thing of like, oh, you're not really bi, you're just, you know, you're just experimenting.
You're just keeping your options open. Yes. Yeah, thanks, Dad.
I definitely had this funny moment where I tried to come out to my mum and she was like, but what about your partner? Like, you know, what about your partner? And I think she got confused and thought that I meant that I was polyamorous. I think she got very confused for it all.
Right. Gotta love boomers, hey.
Boomers are great. I think she's probably pre-boomer.
You mean pre-boomer.
I don't know. She's born in the
60s. So she's old is what you're saying.
She's old, yeah. So I think definitely, yeah, spaces like this where you can do anonymous questions, and because I think finding your community is a huge part of it. Until you find your community as a queer person, like you just basically feel like you're, I don't know, in one of those RPGs, like in a desert somewhere until you find your gang, if you know what I mean. And you don't really, how do you like discuss and explore and understand intellectually and all the other ways of where you are, which is, I think, yeah, again, why I think this podcast could help find, like, bridge those gaps. Anyway, tell me about your thing.
So my something listenable is it's an album by a sort of a band that was sort of coming up from the early 2000s, which a lot of people, especially Aussies, probably never heard of, called Autolux. And Autolux's album we're going to talk about is Future Perfect. Autolux were sort of one of the very sort of first bands that sort of took indie rock in sort of America and sort of just ran with it and sort of started to explore what indie rock could be around things like you'll find like a lot of just really loud psychedelic rock in their influences and their sound. You'll find what's called shoegaze a lot. Not sure if you know what shoegaze is, Paulina.
I do not.
But shoegaze is basically, it's really just heavy guitars where with sort of like quiet, somber sort of vocals. And they also introduced a bit of sort of noise pop into their style and influences as well. So I would recommend this band for sort of anyone who's into sort of Sonic Youth or even Ivy, who likes the idea of different styles around indie rock that play with different sort of elements, where also where the singing duties is sort of shared amongst the entire band as well. So they're a great, fun sort of trio to really get into.
Interesting. Is it screamy, or is it more like...
No, not at all.
Like Blink-182 kind of indie rock, or...
No, Blink-182 is more punk like rock. Yeah, indie rock. It's more, I guess, alternative rock.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
And is shoegaze a reference to them looking at their shoes?
Yep, you've pretty much hit the nail on the head. Yeah. So shoegaze, way back when the music style first started, the sort of the earlier bands that did it, they played sort of like really just underground shows, and because a lot of the time it's more instrumental than lyrical, they would spend a lot of the time, because they use a lot of effects, so they call it shoegaze because they're literally staring at their shoes. So, yeah.
It's cool. Interesting.
Yeah. So let's do the verdicts then.
Okay.
So, Paulina, were any of my picks your kind of weird?
I think Tress. Was it Tress?
Tressé.
I think I'd have a go at Tressé. I'm a bit worried about the gore, but you said it wasn't too bad. But I really liked the concept, and I definitely liked I'm really curious about seeing more Filipino representation in media. I think that's really cool.
Yeah. So 1 out of 3 is good.
Sorry, can you remind me what the first one was again? The first one was Tress. The second one was, yes.
Shadow Man.
Yeah, okay. I feel weird about the voodoo thing.
Okay.
Yeah. So probably 1 out of 3 for me.
Okay, no worries. And out of your picks, I'd have to say all of them, to be honest. So awesome. I think you've done 3 out of 3 for me.
Woo!
So we're going to go on a quick sponsor break, and when we come back, we're going to learn a bit more about Paulina and her indie game company. Hey guys, it's Anthony again, and this podcast is sponsored today by Discord, the Soda and Telepaths Discord. Now, if you're like me, you've struggled to find your people, but don't worry, we've got a Discord for you. We've got all sorts of comic book fans, TV fans, movie fans that have found a little bit of a collective in the Soda and Telepaths Discord. Check the show notes today to go check out the Soda and Telepaths Discord. And we thanks again to Discord for providing a free service. But for now, let's get on with the show. All right, Paulina, so you, I guess you founded and run Dragon Bear Studios. Yeah, so tell us a bit more about that, and I guess how someone gets into gaming development as a whole.
So firstly, I would say that we'd probably describe it more as games than gaming, because gaming is more of a gambling
connotation. Yeah, okay.
It's actually like a really bizarre story, because I didn't start off as a game developer. I guess for most of my professional life, I worked in corporate and government and in business, and I found myself burning out creatively. And I taught myself, I guess, sculpture and modeling in 3D. And I started to realize that actually, I think I need to leave this corporate life industry and do something creative. Mm. So me and Ben Boyd, who's the other co-founder of Dragon Bear Studios, we decided to make a game. So we made this. We worked together during my break, when I had taken a break off work. And we started building this prototype in Unity. And Ben is a programmer. So Ben had some idea what they were doing, but as you can imagine, going from software development to game development is a very different thing and niche. Mm. But we just had a really, really great 3 months just learning things, just being on YouTube, learning, watching all the tutorials, and kind of self-taught ourselves game development and design in a way. Obviously, that's compounded with us being gamers for playing games for most of our lives and loving games and media and literature and art. So it wasn't entirely out of the scope, but it was just It is a bit of a switch to go from playing it to making it. So we presented some prototypes to Film Victoria and we audience tested it with our friends and they actually really loved it.
All right.
Particularly funny because like the friends that we tested on were like hardcore gamers, like very masculine gamers, and they loved this like little innkeeping prototype that we made and they found it really zen. So we were like, this is really exciting. And I forgot to mention, but the kind of core idea of this came from a D&D campaign that I ran from my D&D friends, which let me tell you about.
We've actually had a lot of guests have said that. A lot of stuff comes from D&D campaigns. And that's like, okay, cool. I mean, it's the sort of, I mean, you're making up stories on the fly, aren't you? I mean, sort of controlling that as a dungeon master, you're still the people involved in it. You can't really control what they're going to say or do or what have you. And it's a great sort of, I guess, way to sort of explore things.
Yeah. Actually, now that I guess telling stories to other humans is a very fundamentally human thing to do. It's probably all we do in a way. So it wasn't technically D&D. It was Dungeon World. So slight twist. So let me tell you the pitch. It's about a group of adventurers who aren't very good adventurers. They're pretty rookie. They're still learning the ropes. And they come across this this inn and there's this wizard. And the wizard essentially, they strike a deal with the wizard that they will run the inn. And so, yeah, it's an innkeeping game. But from the lens of an adventurer, if that makes sense. So kind of what happened, so that was like the core of the idea, and we just really enjoyed working on this. So we got funding from Film Victoria and Creative Victoria to make a cool soundtrack and to make a prototype. And I feel like a few months later we got invited by Chad Toprak to exhibit at Unite Melbourne, and we were just play testing it, and it was just like this weird, I guess, gateway into the industry. And next thing you know, we went to GDC. We exhibited at Game Devs of Color in New York in PAX 19. It went pretty fast, honestly. I feel like I've failed to do the pitch. Let me do the pitch properly. So, 4-player co-op game where you run a magical inn and you're trying to win it back from the evil wizard that's trying to take over your uncle's inn. And there's a mix of brewing potions, making food and steak, and there's all these like fantasy-inspired customers, which actually the world is actually Indigenous inspired. We ended up working with a whole bunch of really cool Indigenous artists and creatives and musicians, and that has really shaped where it went after the core prototype. And in really, really excellent ways, actually, integrating art and all the things. It's, I think we're in our just over third year of development.
Is that sort of, for someone who doesn't really know how game development works, is that sort of how long it can take on average, or
they say your first game takes between 3 to 5 years.
Wow.
Which is gobsmackingly a long time. And if you imagine, like, our team is like, at least, you know, it's gone from like 2 people to like, I don't know, 9 people right now. And that's a lot of people working on a game to get it finished. It's such a huge endeavor. And I did not realize how much work and how many like human hours were required to do this thing.
Yeah. I mean, it makes you, you know, look at the sort of larger sort of game studios and things like that that are responsible for things like that, you know, huge games. It makes you wonder how many man hours they're putting in. I mean, why sort of, I mean, the game, at least from the screenshots I've seen, it's cute as fuck. And you can use that cute as fuck Anthony Pollock, my kind of weird. It's cute. It kind of reminds me of sort of like that sort of, not really top down, but sort of that almost that sort of Pokemon-ish style in terms of how it's laid out on the screen. Why did you decide to go in this direction for this type of game versus, you know, saying doing a platform game, like platform jumping game or a shooting game or what have you? Like, what was it about this sort of style that sort of made you go in this direction?
I guess there are a few things. We were quite inspired by Overcooked. And we wanted an optional nonviolent game. So that's why we didn't go shooty or anything. And essentially a lot of it came from playtesting a bunch of co-op games and wanting to make something different that would fulfill our needs and be different and interesting. So we just feel like this kind of isometric perspective gives you a good run of what everyone's doing. And what we wanted to do is create this game that encouraged communication and teamwork. And to do that, you need to be able to see what your friends are doing in the same screen.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
So it's multiplayer.
It's actually online multiplayer as well. And local. We actually just dropped a new trailer a few days ago. We also just announced a really exciting thing, which is that we have partnered with Asmodee Digital as our publisher to produce the game. And during its final,
Does that mean what they're going to release it on platforms, or what does that mean for you?
It means that we will be releasing on all consoles. And that's part of why we have online multiplayer as well on Steam and everywhere else, because we've had that support from Asmodee.
So when I originally got in contact with you, I think it was about, I'm going to say 3 months ago.
Feels like a long time, yeah.
Because part of this, obviously I have a huge sort of comic book sort of side to what I do with having a comic book, news site and comic book PR site. It was also about sort of getting people from different areas of pop culture in. So when we originally spoke, you were saying it's going to be released on Steam soon. Is it on Steam yet, or are you just sort of pulling back the reins and because this new publisher is involved?
So we have a Steam page that you can go and wishlist and have a look at, but it has not been released yet, no. I think it has complicated the process, and also just COVID has created some delays, as you can imagine. So I don't have a date to announce to you yet, sorry, but...
No, that's okay. I'm just curious about how that works. I've noticed with COVID that people seem to be more gravitating towards games that are co-op based, that have that sort of in the makeup of the game, the social aspect. Is that what you're sort of hoping that you're going to get out of this when you finally do launch?
Most definitely. I think COVID has definitely influenced the way that we've developed. Before COVID, we knew that we wanted to build a game that, you know, we felt like people didn't have enough game to play with their partners, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. I know what that's like. Yeah.
I was like searching games to play with my partners and I just didn't come up with much. And so we wanted to do something that would fill that niche. And also we wanted to give parents an opportunity to play with their kids as well in a way that we probably never experienced, Anthony, but we think the next generation probably would really love that. And obviously friends and their flatmates and housemates. We want people to be able to play together and have a really interesting experience, a really fun experience, and potentially come out with, you know, maybe better communication strategies, or maybe they'll learn something about each other, or even if they just have a good time, that would be ideal for me.
So from here, where did you sort of go you mentioned Indigenous, I'm assuming musicians and talent that provided the soundtrack. So how did that process work?
So we did look for an Indigenous composer, but we weren't able to find one. So what we did was we chose what we think is the next best thing, which was a composer named Mina Shamali, who does the like games radio show on ABC Classic. One of the reasons I chose him was because I felt like he would be able to really communicate and navigate that cross-cultural space of what we're trying to create, which is, you know, this indigenous inspired fantasy world mixed with some elements of globalization, because there's really cool portals and magic in this world, if you imagine. So he's working with three indigenous musicians, which play the double bass, the yidiki, which is the didgeridoo, and the violin. So he's, yeah, so we have those session musicians that work with our composer to create the soundtrack.
That's incredible.
It's pretty cool. And we're really grateful to Creative Victoria, who funded that, actually.
Do you have a music background or?
I do, actually. Yeah, I guess in a way I've influenced the audio direction. A while ago I was a classical singer. Yeah, it feels like a really long time ago now. But yeah, I was classically trained for a very, very short period of time. And
hang on, what? You were classically trained for a very short period
of time. But I also just loved like Broadway and, you know, jazz and I don't know, all those kinds of musicals. And oh my God, I love Hamilton. And I also play a little bit of violin and piano. So yeah, I have a little bit of a music background.
How did that inform what you, because I'm assuming the process was you found this this person that was working on the soundtrack for the game. I guess you gave them sort of an idea of what direction you're taking the game in. How did it work in terms of saying yes or no to certain, you know, I guess tracks and I guess movements that they sent back. How did that work? Were you a good sort of artistic director to work with, or were you a diva?
I hope that I'm not a diva. Mina said that he has enjoyed working with me, but I don't know if he just has to say that. No, it's been a really interesting process. I guess we pulled together some influences that we really liked, like as a team. Like, for example, one of the best soundtracks of games that I've ever heard is like Zelda's Breath of the Wild. Like, wow. And then we... Like, but it also there's an element of like, yeah, matching the gameplay, matching what he sees on screen visually. And also a third strong component is the indigenous artists and what they bring and how they want to interpret things. So there's like a bunch of factors, if that makes sense. So generally, yeah, he works on that, and Mina will compose something, pop it to me on Discord, and I will say, yeah, I guess yay or nay. But generally it's yay. I think this far into the process especially, we've already created quite a benchmark and a solid section that he knows which direction it's going. Yeah, it's been an interesting journey.
How good is Discord? I love Discord.
Our entire studio works off Discord.
Okay, yeah. And you got to love that. Do you? So today you're sort of phoning in from an office. Don't know why I said phoning in. Melbourne is where you guys are sort of based from. You just sort of coming out of that sort of snap lockdown. How does it sort of work for you guys? Has it really affected you? Because I assume like most of you could, you know, you're communicating on Discord. You could Zoom if you wanted to. Like I'm assuming there hasn't been a huge delay.
I'd say it's complicated. We're very, very lucky. We've been sponsored by Acme. And so we work in their space. We have a residency program with them. Yeah. And they've been really amazing. It's more other things like morale, mental health. There are just some things which are faster to do in a room together. Probably most things are faster to do in a room together. So we want to make sure that we try and give everyone enough time, extra time, especially to recover from, because, you know, lockdown is mentally exhausting, emotionally exhausting. So, and no one can like create while they're feeling sad or upset. So definitely that's been a part of it, of like, how do I give my team what they need to recover from this, you know, reoccurring nightmare that keeps happening. And try to, yeah, mitigate the productivity losses. It's been difficult.
On reflection, have you identified, and as I guess a sort of a, you know, by proxy as a business leader, have you sort of identified ways you would go about, you know, motivating your team that you've learned how to do now versus before?
Yeah, I think so. One of our producers came up with a really good idea, which was to try and create social hangouts where we play games together as a group. Mm. And yep. actually, that's been really amazing. It's been a highlight of the week when we do it. Because I guess that's what would happen normally in a physical space. You would get that time to unwind and hear about your day and just have a bit of social, whereas in lockdown, you don't get that. And if you want that, you have to really try hard for it. So by trying to and also just like obviously we all love games. So playing games together is a really wholesome activity to let us feel connected despite the circumstances. And I guess, more regular check-ins. It's really not easy though when there's just so much to do. I do wish that players would understand how difficult it is to make a game. Like we released this new trailer and someone left this comment. There's always just some mean comment by someone.
They were being a dick, weren't they?
Your words, not mine. And I was just like, are they okay? Like, is this person all right that they feel the need to lash out at this little indie studio who's just trying to make a nice thing? Like, I wish.
What did they say?
All right. They said something like, oh my God, what a typical sexist thing for you to have a smart female protagonist and an evil wizard male. Something like that. And I'm just like, isn't that literally every single game? Like every single game pretty much has a male bad guy. Like,
incels, man. That's all I have to say. Incels. That's a definite incel you got right there.
Okay.
In the
well, I wish they wouldn't be so incellular. I'm sorry.
Ah, there we go. That's clever.
I haven't done a pun this whole podcast. I don't know. I don't want to jump to conclusions. I hope they're okay though, because I feel like I don't know what type of mental headspace you must be in to say something like that about a cute, wholesome game, right? There aren't many games that have a nice diverse cast of protagonists. I don't know. I don't know, Anthony.
Yeah, I just, was this on Twitter?
It was actually on YouTube.
Oh, all right. Yeah, my whole thing with that is, if they're not following you and, if they're seeing that video for free, then, what are you really complaining about here? Come on, Wait until they're a paying customer and then maybe they have more right to sort of complain, but I feel like right now they don't really have much of a cause.
I think that's something they even said. They were like, I'm just going to keep my money. And I'm like, well, you're not really our target audience anyway. So if we're going to judge a game, just the announcement trailer, right? You're just going to judge the whole game on that one thing and not see all the other really awesome qualities about it.
They could have just turned around and said, the trailer could have been longer, Paulina. The trailer could have been longer,
it's just a thing, I guess, being a creator. People are going to love or hate it, and I'm totally fine with that. That's the reality of the world. I just hope that, it's a tough time, and I just hope people will be nicer about. I've seen there's a lot of like discourse about the wholesome games and things like that. And it's just like, let's just let people play whatever they want to play. Who cares? It doesn't hurt you.
Yeah. In my sort of, I guess, view and my history and just the history of what I've noticed is for every person that gets upset about something, there's 10 people that like it. Mm. So, as long as you've got more people liking your thing than those who don't like your thing, I feel like you're on to a winner.
Thank you. That's very kind.
All right, Paulina, where can people find you on your socials?
So on Twitter, I am Paulina Punlina.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of the game, you can go to enchanted.com, Ian with two N's.
Yeah.
Our game Twitter is like enchanted_games.
Yeah.
And our Dragon Bear Twitter is Dragon Bear Games. Is that too much information?
No, that's plenty. And that'll all be in the show notes as well. So if you guys want to check out Paulina's dragon bear. I keep going to say dragon claw, and I don't know why. If people want to check out Dragon Bear Studios, just check the show notes, and it will all be there as well. So for today, my name's Anthony. I'm from My Kind of Weird podcast. If you guys have enjoyed today's podcast, go subscribe, check us out, give us a review, all the things. You guys know how to do all the things because you're doing all the things. So, Paulina, thanks very much for your time.
No, my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me. It was lovely to chat.
And with one final note, guys, stay weird.